Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to our show, the Neil Baker Psychic Hour. I'm Kristen, and I'm here with Neil Baker. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ah, Monday morning. We are back.
Something, it was the Mamas and Papas.
Monday.
He said you can't trust that day. I wonder why they said that.
I don't know. I guess we're going to be exploring that today on the show. So stay tuned for an exciting conversation, everybody. But first, I'd like to invite all of our listeners to join us right here on Blog Talk Radio. You may do so. Follow button. We depend on our listeners and our callers for support. So we really appreciate those who do support us here. And on Facebook and on Twitter, those sites are also linked under our Blog Talk Radio profile. Neil's direct number, 562-596-7818. And the call-in number for our show this morning, 914-338-0164. No, we're really not talking about Monday, but I don't know what we are talking about today, actually. Not really sure. So, Neil, I just let you...
Well, there's always, you know, the topic of numerology, the topic of psychic energy, is a continuum of thoughts. We never really can get to the end of a discussion. It's always a continuation of what energy is, how it operates in our bodies, how it operates in our thoughts, how that correlates to the elements of our birthday in terms of code, how we can manifest other codes in our life that extend beyond our birthday, not to mention the karma that's involved in our birthday, which I think is something that we always have to pay attention to as well. I think that the attitude of energy is also correlated to the attitude of thought. So thought produces energy. Because our thoughts are actually an energy source of they create a vibration. So doctors will even say, in order to get better, you know, you try not to be depressed, try to do something healthy, try to think healthy. Your attitude is going to be important. And what happens sometimes is we get weighed down by our attitude because our attitude is connected to circumstance. Environmental circumstances. We're not happy about something outside of ourselves. That's one way of looking at life. I would be happier if this changed or that changed.
Right, but much of the time when people get their wishes, I think that they are not as happy as they had initially projected they would be had the desire been granted to them.
Yeah, because what we're getting down to is it's not about the environment per se. We think it is because we get into that race to attain something. But I think that the core issue of energy is what the energy we create inside so that we are constantly feeling blessed and happy and excited about existence no matter what's going on in our environment. So what is the core issue to happiness? The inner being. the attitudes. That is the core issue, the core itself. So to me, when I'm looking at a birth date or when I'm talking to somebody, I sometimes will question them under the guidelines as to how really internally sound they are. Because a person who is internally sound and has a strong basis, has a strong balance, is ultimately going to produce a dialogue that doesn't sound desperate, doesn't sound too much in need. Most of us, though, when you listen to yourselves or you listen to others, a lot of our dialogue, the energy behind our dialogue is in relation to need. I want this. When am I going to get that? And not to say that everybody feels that way, because there are some people that are, you know, the other part of it is that some people are just looking for validations. Is he my soulmate? That's not a want. That's a question. Is he my soulmate? Is this the right place for me? So those are more deeper questions that have not really to do with want, but validation or acknowledgement about knowing what is the right course that one is taking. So questions are phrased in two different ways. One is according to need or desire. The other one is according to validation or direction. So we have those two elements that we're looking at. And actually, in our birth dates, we have number systems that will imply how far we are in the advancement of body, soul, and spirit. And if we're low in the form of body, then we're going to be constantly looking things to assure the body. When am I going to get money? When am I going to get a job? Or when am I going to get a soulmate? When am I going to get a boyfriend? When am I going to get a girlfriend? Those are really elements of the lower energies, even though in time they can transform into something that's much higher, given that once we have our security needs met, we start to look for higher forms of energy.
So when you're looking at an individual's given birth date, you can hear where they are in terms of that body, soul, or spirit vibration in terms of their birth date code. It's easily revealed or detected by the dialogue that they're conducting mm-hmm. about their lives.
But anyone can be trained to hear that or have an intuitive skill to hear that. And what we're also looking at is what's real and what's not real about a person's energy, what's really hit the core issue of what's important. A lot of us in life try to avoid the truth or the essence of life by capturing a lot of superfluous energy. We surround ourselves with things because we really have no core essence about life. And then some of us have very little, but we feel fulfilled. Why is that? Why do you suppose that is? That a person who has very little can feel very fulfilled, and a person who has tremendous amounts of everything material-wise feels empty.
Well, obviously, the person with less material is more highly connected to their spiritual body.
Yeah, so we're dealing with what is truth and what is not truth in terms of existence. What is really tangible truth? Is it material? Is it physical? Or is it something that you can't quite put on a table and show somebody? So we have to get to this idea, and this is nothing new. This is ancient debate. Where is reality and what is it truth? Is it physical or is it metaphysical? Is it in the form of an object, and an object can be broadly defined, or is it in the form of a feeling? And then how do we define that feeling, and how do we manifest it? So I think that's the big question, and I think a lot of people, even my fellow numerologists, get caught up sometimes in the system of numbers. What numbers really mean, because I don't think numbers really have any specific meaning.
Well,
I mean, they have a specific meaning, but they don't, you know, to say...
To generalize, you're talking about generalizing a personality based on a single number.
Yeah.
The numerology is much more about, much more than just defining a person based on their personality. I mean, just as our existences on the planet are more deep than just whatever persona we're projecting to the world. We're more than a personality.
We're more than it's not a personality. Yeah, that's right. We're not. It's just not a personality. But a lot of people will say, "Oh, you're a three. Oh, you're this. You're that." And even though I myself have lapsed into such common phrases as that, I know in my mind what I mean when I'm generalizing. There's something deeper, and I'm sure that a lot of numerologists will say, "Oh, well." Of course it means more than that. There's other things. There's other elements. And you have to, and it's a science of numbers. And the numbers correlate. And they have broader significance. But we're not just talking about numbers per se. We're talking about the mind.
But I have, you know, I want to make a statement, Neil, about when we do have specific master numbers, we're going to, I mean, there are associated tasks with those master numbers that we're expected to complete as a level that we're going to rise up to, supposedly, in our life if we're going to move on to the next lifetime or transcend the planet. Isn't that true? I mean, there's...
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, we, you know, it's not a matter that whether 10 people are assigned to build a house or 10 people are assigned to concoct a recipe. It's how what you put into that building, how you approach it, what your maneuvers are. Those are important aspects as to what builds the character of someone who are a group of people who have common goals. So if I'm dealing with 5 people in one day and their master numbers are 1 and 1 is about earth and home, that doesn't mean that every reading I'm doing is going to be the same dialogue. Oh, you're a 1. Oh, and you're a 1. Oh, and you're a 1. And you're looking for a home. And you're looking for... Every reading is going to be different because some of those people are going to have brothers, sisters. Some will have only one parent. Some will be male, female. Some will have a harsh, dark history. Some will have a brighter history. So the element of what a master number is hardly consigned to a generalization.
Right, and 1 on a spiritual level is going to be a completely different 1 than someone who's just operating on a physical level, you know, finding their security or home. Someone on a spiritual level may be, you know, on their way to transcending, on a 1 level is what I mean. On their way to transcending and, you know, being 1 with God. So
right, because the 1 factor, if you're dealing with someone who's struggling with a 1 in a home environment or in a grounding situation where they're looking for their immediate lower brain primitive survival needs, is going to be different from someone who's saying, I've got all that down. I'm okay there. What I'm looking at is the basis of faith and belief. I'm trying to understand the higher principles and ground myself in a system of higher thinking. So that's going to be that's the division and the duality of a 1. I'll have people who come to me who are very well renowned, but they say, you know, I'm beginning to understand the spirit world. I'm just getting my feet wet right now. And so that 1 is not going to be about the attainment of physical security. It's about the attainment of spiritual security. And so a 1 can have that variation. A 2, on the other hand, may be saying, I'm really looking for a relationship, and I need that relationship. I've had nothing but problems in my life. I can't seem to hold a relationship together, and I'm looking for a grounding of a relationship. That's a typical 2 energy, but a 2 may also say, oh, I've got a great relationship. I'm married.
Right. A lot of 2s are on a positive side, are into having families, having children, because the reproductive chakra.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of twos may have that, but the two may be lacking maybe in their energy with God. That may be. So we have now.
So why would that be?
Or with angels. Or
so why would that be, Neil? Because it's in the lower chakra, and they may have a hard time getting up to those higher chakras. Is that?
Well, because there's a, they filled all of their lower brain or lower energy two factors, and that can still include success. They filled it up to the brim. And now what they're beginning to try to grasp is, what is the two level of the seventh chakra? How do I get to a place where I can believe in angels? Maybe they lost somebody in life, and they're trying to formulate a connection with somebody on the other side. And so they have a two struggle in terms of relationship, because I've had people who say, I cannot go on until I find my lover or my mother or my father or my brother or my husband or my wife who have crossed over, and I've got to talk to them. I'm desperate. There's so much unresolved. I've had several people come to me, and they're very secure, they're okay, but the loss of a loved one has prompted them to rediscover or search for them. Even Houdini himself was constantly looking for his mother after she died, and he did so. He was debunking.
Debunking.
He was throwing everybody out of bed.
Gosh, I didn't know Houdini had bunk beds.
Yeah, bunk bed.
You're full of facts, Neil.
Yeah.
Wow.
The whole line, the Houdini mattress. You lay on it and you disappear. The idea, though, is that in the attitude of trying to find someone, that might take it up to the metaphysical plane. Or lastly, because I know we have a caller, lastly, the attitude can be, I'm trying to rebirth my energy. I'm trying to find my higher self. And that can be a dilemma of a two.
Yes.
So it takes various forms.
And I suspect we're going to have a little time today, because it is a little bit light on callers. So I actually am going to ask questions about two in relation to another topic after the caller. So let's bring them on. 678. Good morning.
This is Sue Steele. How are you?
Hi, Sue.
Hey, I have a really interesting question.
Okay,
I'm actually writing a book. Sure.
Sue, let me get your birth date again. I know you're a 9, I believe.
Yeah, it's a May 22, 62. Sorry.
5/22/62. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
My question is, I'm writing a book, and the name of the book is Outwitting the Narcissist. So as such, I'm the narcissist. And I'm up for a huge job, and guess what I attracted as a CEO? A narcissist.
A narcissist.
So my question is this job for me, or is it really part of my research for the book?
Okay.
Is the job for you, or is it part of the research for your book?
But she's writing about outwitting the narcissist, and she's encountered this narcissist.
In
and
her
the
job.
CEO is a malignant narcissist, right? Clinically speaking, he's brilliant, and the job itself, the content, is something I've done 25 years, so I could easily, you know, do it with no discomfort. However, putting the personality of a narcissist in that job is probably not the healthiest thing for anybody. I'm actually a corporate treasurer. I manage money for companies.
Okay.
And this job would actually be global treasury consulting, so I'd work for massive amounts of companies.
Okay.
It's they're intertwined. If I'm hearing you correctly, you're not working just to work, and you're not writing the book just to write the book. You're writing
that
the
is
book.
True.
You're writing the book in the environment that you're working in. It's like saying I'm a war correspondent. Am I supposed to be here?
That's a great analogy.
Isn't it? Wow.
You are here to understand the not only the core issue of the war, but also a way to how to win the war, how to manage the war, how to outwit your enemy, how to come to a place where war has been turned into peace. Outwitting the narcissist is really it's a bizarre position, because if you outwit the narcissist, then you come to an element of higher symbiotic altruistic living. So
yes,
any narcissist, ultimately, if you advance through life, what you find in the process of the battle of the ego, of the narcissist mind way of thinking, which some people might be trapped in until the day they die, but outwitting the narcissist is to also understand that you don't get caught up in the battle of the ego or in the element of what is power and personal power, and do you attain personal power by destroying somebody else's power? So, and you're in the global market of and the treasury energy of that, which is basically almost built-in competition, which brings in a sense of narcissism because you want to win and you're of one
right.
person. Narcissism comes from Narcissus, which actually was in love with her own reflection and wanted the element of what was in the reflection of the water. And when she went to grab it, Narcissus lost both things. So you actually end up losing by forming a lifetime of vanity, because vanity fades. So I think to answer your question without getting too esoteric here and outgrowing the question, they are one and the same. You are involved in this world because it's karmic for you. And you're involved in it so that you can understand the elements of transcendence even as you attack the components of what you are criticizing and trying to outwit. So in terms of that, you are one and the same with your opponent. You are the narcissist and you are the transcendent being. You are in the war, and yet you're observing the war. So it's one and the same. And I think that the idea is that the element of higher thinking when you're producing a book such as Outwitting the Narcissist is to transcend the topic, so it becomes not only timely, but it becomes a universal concept so that people can understand both sides of the issue and yet transcend it without getting caught up in the debate. So to me, they're one and the same. You are there because you need to be there. And it's not that you can't separate the issue.
That's perfect. That was an absolutely A-plus rendition of what I need to hear.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Glad to hear. Sue, I have actually another question because we have a little time.
Sure.
Last time we spoke with you, you had had I don't know if it's okay if I bring this up, but it was on the air, so I'm assuming, it was public.
Sure, no problem.
You were going to go out on a date with a guy. You didn't have his birthday, but you were inquiring about that. Did that ever happen? Because I don't think we've spoken with him.
I did, and he was a surgeon, and he's a narcissist.
I would
he actually is. Surprise, surprise. He's a GYN, really brilliant guy, except he also does robotic surgery. I mean, really brilliant, very well known. And long story short, he kept this woman that was at 7 centimeters, 10 to deliver for those men that don't understand. And he said, she can wait. And I said, why are you saying that? You're putting her in pain. He says, a little pain never hurt anybody. So I said,
wow.
Hey, did you ever like your mother? And he said, no. I said, that's why you became a doctor with a woman's field. And he says, yeah, I did. So needless
wow.
to say, after I realized that he was a narcissist and quite abusive in his field of domain medicine, I said, okay, that's just part of the book. Noted.
Wow.
You know? But yeah, I went on several dates with him, but when it came to that conversation, leaving that lady in pain, that didn't sit well with me.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. But interesting.
That's part of the book, I guess.
I guess
part of the journey.
On it, path of research, even if it is leading into the love life situation. Okay, well, glad
okay.
You got that answer, too. Well, good luck in
No,
the
I'll
job.
Keep you guys posted. Thanks very much.
Yeah, you so. Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks.
625-967-818 is Neil's number. You know, the subject of narcissists and passive aggressive people is, well, I love studying personalities. I mean, it's very interesting to me, or personality disorders. So I'd be interested in her book, definitely. Narcissists are frightening. They're conscienceless, I think. Conscienceless, rather. They're conscious, I hope. Not unconscious, but conscienceless.
Well,
and sadistic a lot of times.
John Donne, no man is an island. I think ultimately we have to place ourselves in a position of oneness. But I think the healthy aspect of oneness is that we are just not one individual in the universe, but that we are all one in the universe. So the way to outwit a narcissist is to form an attitude that we are all one, that actually almost the way it's a very challenging endeavor, because you can outwit a narcissist by playing a competitive game and winning in terms of outwitting the narcissist, outsmarting the narcissist. But the ultimate way of outwitting the narcissist, and I'm in dangerous waters here because you have to be very careful when you use these terms, is to love the narcissist. I think that the love ultimately can win somebody over. One of the great Les Miserables, the book, not the movie, and the movie is fine, the movie, the musical, that's all great. But the idea of learning how to forgive, I think narcissists learn how to inflate their ego because they're basically insecure and they don't trust the world. So they only trust themselves, and they only gratify the ego of who they are without conceptualizing that the world is not their oyster, that actually the world is a universal concept of being. So what they've done is they've detached themselves from the universal principles, and they've attained an attitude of singularity in terms of psyche. So there's a very limiting factor in that realm of thinking. When I'm dealing with a narcissist, I mean, it can be very narcissist and nauseous. They almost sound alike. You know, I get very nauseous around narcissists, but at the same time, I'm understanding the deeper principles of what they're lacking.
Right, and there's different grades of narcissists, of course. I mean, people can have narcissistic tendencies, and then they can be full-blown narcissists where they have absolutely no feeling, seemingly.
Oh, yeah. And you
which
can get...
I've encountered those people as well, and it's really scary to me.
Yeah, and I've actually given some narcissists the letter grade of C- as opposed to A. Some of them don't even make good narcissists. They are. I go, you're not a narcissist. You could do much better. There is a systematic grading energy of what narcissism is, and I think at some point the core issue of narcissism is survival. And we still have to, within the lower brain, we still have to think of survival. You know, we are here trying to survive and use our body as the principal mechanism of survival. So, yes, we're programmed to survive. We're programmed to eat. It's in the animal kingdom. The alpha eats first. Are they narcissists? You know, the king of the lion pride, the lion, is he a narcissist? I mean, does he really think is he really thinking as a narcissist, or is he thinking in terms of the heredity, the genes, the instinct level? So is there a principle of instinct, instinctual nature in the narcissist? I would have to say to some extent there is, as long as you don't.
So we're talking about the lower brain,
yeah,
the narcissist, but they're not ascending to a higher chakra level.
Yeah, unfortunately, because we are thinking human beings, we're supposed to graduate from the instinctual nature of being a narcissist into more of the higher element of what oneness really means.
Okay, Neil, we have another caller, which is interesting. Same area code as the last, 678. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Regina.
Hi, Regina.
Hi.
And your date of birth, Regina, what area code is this? Where are you calling from?
Georgia.
Georgia.
And my birthday is January 8, 1979.
Okay. What's going on, Regina?
I just want to see when my unemployment would come in before the 4th of July.
Okay, so you're looking for unemployment benefits.
Right.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you've applied, I'm assuming, and you're waiting.
Right.
All
mm-hmm.
right. Okay.
Well, unemployment benefits, you know, we're dealing in the matter of money. And here we go back to generalizing a number system. Eights do encompass a matter of money.
You're all about money, power.
Yeah. Well, eights do have some, an eight has some aspect of money energy in the number. Because eights, mm-hmm. In some regards, Regina, eights are rulers. They have powerful energies. They have power. They think of that in that term, and the way that our world is structured on currency, monetary value, we are basically an animal that regards status and well-being in terms of money. When money is just a material symbolic presence of what accumulates wealth or needs or necessities, and you're seeking money, this is one of your issues. Now, I want to tell you something in terms of the formula of your life. You're born on the 8th, which is on the karmic side of your birthday. That means that you have a karma problem with money. Money presents a karma for you. Now,
mm-hmm.
you're born in 79. Now, remember, you're born in 79. What's missing there in sequence is an 8. You have 7, 9. Where's the 8? It's missing.
Mm-hmm.
So on the transcendent
mm-hmm.
side of your energy, there's a karmic element going on that you're supposed to have struggle with money. Now, in addition to that, we form our triangle, your master number is 8. So you have an 8 on the day you're born. You have a missing 8, coincidentally, in your sequence of your year. And then you are a master number 8. Now, if we look at those three eights, if you will, Regina, we
mm-hmm.
actually get a 24, which is a 6. So
mm-hmm.
there's something in the visionary energy, maybe that's why you're calling psychic shows, there's something in the visionary energy of your karma to where money, in terms of creative visualization and creative thinking, is lacking. So what you're doing is you're seeking an unemployment. In other words, you're not employed in life, but we earn unemployment. I understand that. But you're not employed in life, and you're seeking benefits. However rightfully obtained they may be, you're still seeking a benefit by being unemployed. That means that there's something that you're not occupying. There's something deeper going on here. Do I think you're going to get unemployment? To answer your question, do you want to have the answer? The answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think
okay.
that solves your dilemma. I don't think that solves your dilemma. It solves your immediate problem on the lower level of
mm-hmm.
survival, which is
right.
important. I don't deny that. But But because your journey, Regina, you're an 8, fabulous number. You're born in 79, beautiful arrangement. What's missing is something much more important than just having a sigh of relief because you obtained your unemployment benefit.
Mm-hmm.
The answer goes deeper into your soul, which is a whole different course of investigation other than what you can do through the bureaucracy and the system to obtain your money value. Because you had a change a year ago at 35.
Mm-hmm.
There might have been a slight a slippage of your supportive system at that time, which would have compelled you to start to look at spiritual matters. But what happened during your age of 35, which you not too far from, you're 36. So what happened when you were 35?
Well, I was separated from my ex-husband, but I got a divorce this year, though.
Yeah. See, you were separated from your ex-husband. You had a divorce mm-hmm. going on. So, see, that separation, it's separating. There's a theme going on, Regina, and I'm talking deeper into the depth of your soul. There's a theme
mm-hmm.
going on in this lifetime that you've come back to reconnect to something. But in the course of that journey, you have to first separate, and that means a loss.
Mm-hmm.
In the loss of any energy, we rediscover ourselves. Sometimes we lose things in order to find out who we are, because what we're holding on to is just karma.
Okay.
So I believe that at 35, instead of graduating to a higher place, you lost a certain amount of karma, and thereby you actually are gaining something in realizing something. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
we have to dive to the bottom to get the pearl.
Right.
You're diving
mm-hmm.
to the bottom of your karma in order to achieve the pearl of wisdom, I believe, which ultimately mm-hmm. will take its course as you formulate, probably towards the age of 40, between 36 and 40, you're going to find your pearl of wisdom.
Okay.
Okay, Regina,
well
more
thank
than you.
You
asked for, but I think
I know.
Good advice. Yeah.
That was, yes, it was. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
But she'll get her unemployment.
She'll get her unemployment yeah. benefits, but, you know, it was probably things she needed to hear, which is always good. All right, Neil. Well, getting back to our numbers discussion, we were talking about the number 2. Second chakra, but you know, I wanted to kind of veer into the 11 topic because, as many of our listeners know, when we discuss 11, we're always reducing the number 11 when it comes into a calculation in terms of a birth date. So, master numbers 1 through 9, 11 becomes 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so, let's talk a little bit about 11 in regard to that, too. Obviously, 2 can be derived from a 20, so there can be no 11,
mm-hmm.
but oftentimes that's does come by way of 11, and we were talking about a really funny expression on your face right now.
Thank you.
Yeah, big time. Let's talk a little bit about 11, and we'll try to, I don't know, Neil, we've got about 20 minutes, so we'll try to get through some of the other numbers as well, but I wanted to spend a little time focusing on that number today.
Well, 11 is an odd number. It 11 has its own... to me, I've defined 11 in a direct contrast to what people think 11 is.
Right, because
there's
a great deal of information about 11-11 awakening, connecting to the 12-12 phenomenon when the planet is turning into a fourth dimensional universe or planet, and, you know, we're getting rid of all karma, which is a great notion. Love changing energy to positive, but the 11 has a darker connotation in many instances. So, you know, it's a number of duality, as all the numbers are. So there's both positive and negative aspects to the number 11. But do you associate so much with the 11-11 awakening code?
Well, you know, it's a deep topic, but I'm not, when you're looking at 11, you can define it in its progression of thought and the development of it, what it really ultimately means. some people I've heard say, you know, it's a reflection of self.
It's a twin soul.
It's a twin soul. It's one. We could go deeper and say it's a reflection of just self. It's the psyche in terms of physicality and the psyche in terms of spirituality. Because of the formation in pictorial form, as though it were a language of illustration and not number, it is one looking at one. It is one looking. But you see, what makes 11 very precarious in its nature is that if you equate it to one and one being man or woman and God, we're putting then God on the same equal level as ourselves, and it takes on an ominous quality of definition, because what it amounts to is challenging the gods, challenging God and God, challenging the concept that you are one on an equal level with all existence, which becomes a problem when it's defined in terms of the ego, because in the system of the ego, I can also, I've spent years studying about the number 11 and have found tragedy happening on the dates of 11. Horrible things happening.
I mean, even our emergency code is 911.
Yeah.
Aside from the event 9/11.
Which is an 11.
9 and 1 is 1 is 11.
So to say that 11 is a blissful number, I think, is to be totally irresponsibly ignorant.
I wonder how that was created, 911.
I don't know. That I don't.
That would be interesting to research. Because, I mean, there are elements out there that know about the power of numbers and codes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is a code in itself. You see, when we have a certain element of perfection, like we have 10 commandments, we have 10 digits. 10 is a completion number. That's a completion number. 11 is one beyond completion. So it becomes an odd number, and it defies completion, meaning that, let's look at this in terms of just for the sake of a philosophical argument. It's saying God wasn't good enough. If he wasn't perfect, 10 isn't perfect, we need to create one extra. And so what we do is we defy perfection, and we bring in that one extra energy, which formulates into an attitude of defiance.
God against man.
It basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that has that concept. Now, I know I'm probably going to get a lot of responses from people, and they're going to go, oh, you just don't know what you're talking about, one and one. Uh-huh. And I understand on a certain level that an 11 can hold a blissful energy. I'm not saying that it doesn't, and I'm not saying that in the universal concept of soulmates and twin souls and twin flames, that an 11 doesn't have its proper setting and place. I want to say on record it does. But to universally, to just apply that number as this heaven-born celestial completion is to not look at the facts as they stand. Because when we look at the facts that they stand, we have to, not only is 9/11 the distress number, 9/11 the date.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to put this into our book of numerology. When you look at the 11th energy, the 11th hour, the final hour, it's short of the attitude of 12. It's November. It's got a certain element in it that is not one above, but it's one shy now of the element of 12. And the element of 12 supersedes now the attitude of 10. So we're looking at it in the duality of what 11 is. It's kind of cushioned between one extra and one lacking.
Right. And, you know, you bring up 10, and of course you talk about 10 being a completion number, but, you know, I want to digress back to the number 1, which is often derived from the compounded number of 10. And sometimes 10, you know, again, a number of duality. As much as it is a number of completion, you've got that zero factor with the 1, which is often problematic.
Well, it is problematic.
For people that are compounded.
Yeah. For people Because an,
or a
10 11,
in any place in the first
11 is in the midst of a number. So when you, if you're going to talk about 11, you cannot extract it from numerology. 11 is not a master number. Sorry.
Right. That's
you can argue with me all you want.
You brought up a point I wanted to make, Neil, because people talk about master numbers. 11, I mean, they're saying, you know, 1 through 9 are master numbers. But in addition, we have 11, 22, 33, and 44. And those are, I think the term is master builder numbers. I don't know what they're building, but anyway, perhaps they're constructing houses. The 11s are constructing houses. The 22s are constructing marriage, family counseling.
It's not even an 11 reduces a 29, reduces to an 11. 11 reduces to a 2. So you can reduce it in numerical value to a 2, but you cannot from a 2 build into an 11. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. You can't build from a 2 upward to an 11, but in numerical value, you can reduce an 11 so far as you're counting two numbers together to build a single number. You can reduce an 11 into a 2. Now, the ultimate conclusion behind numerology is you've got to reduce it to a single digit. So an 11, a 29, an 11, whatever it may be, is a 2. That's what it is.
Because all digits are reduced. Now, why? I mean, why do we reduce all digits, Neil?
Well, we reduce all digits because we, first of all, it's in the systematic count level. We're counting systematically between 1 and 9 before we start to get into our compounded factors. And counting was an act. So we measured by counting. And that became part of the science of how we traded, of how we discussed. So we started to build on that element. Most of it came by, you know, measurement was by the elbow to the fingertip.
I still use that method.
Yeah, elbow to fingertip. Or foot to foot, heel to toe, heel to toe. We didn't have any measurement other than the body itself. If we get into the attitude of the body itself, we also have to measure the metaphysical body, which is the chakra system.
Right, so we need to lower every number, reduce every number until we have the lowest common denominator. But it doesn't, of course, that 11 has significance. You have to analyze the number from which it is reduced, the numbers that are comprising the number that it's reduced from. So all the numbers in the birth date, the karmic number, what the karmic number is reduced to, and the master number. So we don't mean to say that 11 doesn't have a significant value or meaning when it's applied to a person's energy. It does, but you have to reduce.
Well, you bring, that's an excellent point, because you bring up a crucial term in karma. 11 is a karmic number.
It's a karmic number.
With master builder, you're building it. I mean, anything that is beyond 10, 11 becomes significant because it's really the first number beyond the digits, the human digits of 10.
Right.
And if we look at the attitude that an 11 is a 2 or a 20 is a 2, we basically, most of us have 20 digits. We count on our left hand and our toes.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 20 digits. That stems from the element, too, that we have male and female. I mean, we're branching into all kinds of different aspects of what sexuality is. But as it stands by the course of original nature, we have a man and we have a woman. And that attitude of two becomes a uniqueness because it says two shall become one. So now we're dealing with if two becomes one, we're actually motioning towards the attitude of three because we're dealing with three different forms. Two becomes one. Two and one is three. So we're actually, as we're digressing, we're progressing into an element which brings us into a favor of spirituality. Because when we get into three, what we've built into that concept is Trinity, triangular energy. Now we've got the formation of symbols and design, something beyond a line. As soon as you have three points, you have an angle, you have a figure, You have a geometric figure. Now we're getting to the attitude of geometrics. Now we get into the attitude of the origin of pi, which is 3.14, blah, 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 blah. And we're getting into more elements now as we elaborate into a system of thinking. And we get into calculus and physics and all kinds of other forms of understanding where the universe, how the universe expands and how the universe was born, and where we're going beyond any concept of what numbers is into the affinity of nothingness. The affinity of nothingness, which is a redundant kind of a contradictory term in and of itself, because there is such a terminology between the two elements. And as we tear down, we're actually building up. So we get into the prospect, the attitude of entropy and how things break down. And what? And really, when things break down, what happens to the smallest element? We're trying to fit everything into a small element. So as our consciousness expands, our computers are getting smaller. And pretty soon, we'll be regulated by a chip. Pretty soon, we won't even know where the chip is.
I'm not going to be regulated
so small,
by the way.
Goodbye, Mr. Chip. You know, we're getting into the smaller it is, the more concentrated the brain. The more expansiveness is in smallness. And so we're not, it used to be computers were so clunky and huge. We didn't know. Now they're going to be in our eyelashes. And we're going to be able to formulate and see the world through the connection of the internet built into a chip in our eyeball, in our brain somewhere. When you look at the pituitary gland, when you look at the elements are the not the pituitary,
the pineal gland.
Thank you. You're looking at the whole world of cosmic consciousness, because that's where the thing is. Narrow and straight is the kingdom to God. So the attitude here is that we can't really define anything on its face value. And to make these blanket general statements is to really obscure the full breadth of how we define existence. And it's just not, I'm sorry, when I hear people say, well, 11, you know, soulmate, that twin flame and your master builder, it takes away so much from the depth and the layers. We're so afraid to broaden our concept because we want to be so simplistic that we can remain comfortable and secure in this simplistic system of thinking in this terms of what a number is. A number means a million different things,
right,
in its singularity.
So let's talk about the number three and what it means. Now I hear the people are, that are threes are creative, and teasing me, of course. No, I think it's very important that people know that there is much more than a few adjectives that describe a number, or there's more to, you know, moving into ascension when you look at a clock and see 11:11. Or maybe it means nothing. You know, I've been seeing 11:11 frequently, and I think my brain has actually been trained because I see these posts about 11:11 so frequently, and it's scaring me because of the negative implications of 11:11. I don't think it means anything. I think it's just been influenced by, you know, seeing so much about it.
You
that I'm starting to look at the
You clock. Also see trees and sky.
Sure.
And TV. I mean, it's just nothing. We can it's not. It makes for a nice chaotic plot of espionage or some occult.
Well, and it can, you know, I mean, there have been several callers that do see number sequences, and sometimes there is significance to something that's going on in their life. More often I've heard you define 11:11, though, to those people as something might be going on that's a challenge or...
Well, I'm flexible. I mean, I'm flexible in my experience with numbers and suddenly seeing numbers everywhere. Before my mother died, she was seeing 11:11 everywhere. Maybe she would know. I knew she was dying, but she said, well, you know, Neil, neurologist, what does this mean? I said, it means nothing. It means you're looking at the clock.
Look at 11:11.
Our brain is sometimes geared we do work on a lot of us have internal clocks. We become lazy, so we need a clock. But what animal has a clock? When did the last time did you saw a bird with a wristwatch on its wing? We are built to understand time internally. What we've done is we've escaped and we formulated into an area of a universal concept of what time is, so we can have an order in the universe, and not everyone's just feeling what time is. If we did that, you know, we wouldn't have a uniformity of, we wouldn't have conformity of in any organized sense. But on an individual level, we do have internal clocks. Whether we are adjusted to that is another matter of discussion, but we're regulated. We can train ourselves. When I was growing up being in my youth as a psychic, people would say to me, "What time is it?" And I'll go, "It's 9:02. They go, "Yeah, you're right.
That's an 11.
And
something dark is going on.
7:21. I stopped doing that because it was nothing but, I mean, it was an exercise of psychic vision and intuition and feeling the energy. But so what? I mean, so what? What else is new? We're built that way. We should be built that way. But that doesn't mean that there's any significance. We build meaning into things. Our brains are conditioned to build meaning into something. And if we want to build a meaning into any set of numbers, whether they're compounded or there is a singularity, well, then the attitude is we have to take it to the laboratory. We have to take it to the build some empirical evidence behind the concept that numbers are just not arbitrary or coincidental, but they're significant in their code and they can produce. Yeah, she just said 90 seconds. So
I wonder what that means.
That means that we're almost out of time. And we
filled
the void with words.
The 0-point concept.
0-point concept.
Has been deleted on the show. It's 111. There was one. I just looked at the time remaining, and it said 111. I don't know. What does that mean? We'll have to analyze that after the show. Okay, so, you know, people have been requesting shows dedicated to conversation rather than readings, and today we were able to accommodate that request because we have very few callers, but it is a good opportunity. So perhaps, Neil, on the next show, we can actually get into the third chakra, the number 3, and move upwards from there and also take your call. So we are back on the air on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.